Welcome to this month's edition of the Sports Info Solutions Baseball Podcast. I'm Mark Simon. You'll hear from our VP of Baseball, Bobby Scales, as well. We honor Black History Month with two guests, Steve Williams, Vice President of Player Personnel for the Pirates, and also President of the Buck O'Neill Professional Baseball Scouts and Coaches Association, and former MLB pitcher LaTroy Hawkins, a special assistant in baseball operations for the Twins. Let's get to it. Steve Williams is the president of the Buck O'Neill Professional Baseball Scouts and Coaches Association, also with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Bobby, you've worked with him. Give us a rundown on his background.
Oh, man, where do we start? This man had the unfortunate opportunity to see me play quite a bit, wrote various scouting reports on me as a player. No, but I want to start with this. Steve Williams has become friend, family, mentor, all of these things. And I told you earlier, Mark, when we were off the air, but Steve Williams is on my Mount Rushmore of mentors, not just in the game, but just in my own life. There's nothing I can't call this man about. And also, if I need to understand the evaluation of a player or how you got to this grade or why you guys did this and the logic behind it, why you would do this in this situation, I've been able to call him. So Stevie is more than just someone I've worked with and someone that scouted me. He's really become someone that I can lean on in a professional fashion. And your vice president of player personnel for the Pirates. Just walk us through the early part of your career, how you got in and things of that nature. We can get to what your role at the Buck and how that plays into and making sure that minorities and Black History Month and Black folks inside this game get opportunities they deserve.
Well, boy, Bobby, I've been blessed to one, get another promotion. So now it's VP, which I never thought it would be a VP starting in 1988. As a young scout, like I said, as you know, I played at Clemson University, and my college coaches were very integral in my life. You know, my head college coach is more of a father figure than anything else. And he was really supportive of me as a player, as a person, becoming a man, just like my father was. And so Coach Wilhelm and one of our assistant coaches who was at Minnesota, who lived in Minnesota, Twins were looking for an area scout. I just finished playing as a college player. They recommended me, went into an interview, never thought I would even think about being a scout, never knew what it was going to be, or walked into an interview with Terry Ryan in Atlanta in January 1988, walked out of that interview and go, hey, man, this would be a cool job to do. Never thought that he would call me on that Monday and offer me the opportunity to do it. I go, there's no way he's going to hire me. I didn't have any experience. You know, back then, you know, all the scouts were older. I mean, they were, you know, my age and like I am now. They've been around. They've done a lot of work. There wasn't many young scouts at that time. And Terry hired me. And I jumped into this business and, you know, I walked out of it the first year. My dad goes, hey, you know, how do you like this gig? And I said, Dad, if I could double my salary, I'd do this forever. Right. And I've been very blessed to be the more than double my salary. Been able now just to be starting year 37, just enjoying the journey, doing things I never thought a little country boy from North Carolina would do. Travel and being in different spots and being able to have one great mentor as myself. Had a lot of people pour into me, a lot of people. My first year scouting, my second year scouting, helped me, guide me through my career. And now, you know, I'm at the end of it. You know, basically we talk about it all the time, you know, getting to the point of, can I get to 40? It'd be great. So now one of my drives for me is to mentor, help develop people. And that's, you know, some of the things that we did with the Buck, how the Buck got started, and just kind of talking through that a little bit. You know, we've been in the Buck now 25 plus years as an organization, grassroots. Danny Montgomery, Fred Wright, and myself, we were all area scouts in the Carolinas. Just wanted to get people together. We wanted to get like-minded brown and Black people together and focus on, you know, one, initially kind of started, it wasn't many of us in the game at that time. I mean, you could count, you know, the people that looked like me, especially in the scouting realm, basically on one hand in each region. You know, there wasn't many of us. So we were trying to get all of us together, more of a support staff, support group. No, just, hey, what do you eat in this town? Where do you get a haircut in this town? What do you do? Just simple little things, you know, where not to stay, where to stay if you're traveling around the country. And we had our first meeting. Our first meeting was 15 of us. We didn't know how to organize a meeting. We didn't have to do nothing. I mean, our first meeting was in a suite at the Marriott Marquis in Atlanta. We didn't know how to negotiate rates. We didn't know how to do any of that stuff, right? And so when we sat down and we wanted to, how do we, what do we name this group? We have the things that we believed in. We want to give back to our community as well. And so Fred Wright, you know, was a big, he idolized Buck O'Neill, and we all do as well. He said, let's name this after Buck. Because the one thing we didn't want to come across as is a, you know, an organization that was, and we talked about it, we didn't want to be, you know, an organization that this, we were a baseball organization. We weren't a black organization. We weren't a brown organization. We are a baseball organization, but we're our focus is to our community. So everybody, anybody that's a member of baseball, anybody that's a baseball person can be a part of the Buck. You know, we did not want to be the organization where we shut anybody out. And we, as you know, our membership is very diverse. And, you know, we have over 200 members of the Buck now. After all this time, we have general managers and assistant GMs and, you know, outside of baseball, high school coaches. It's a very diverse group, a very talented group as well. And so as we started, you know, we wanted to name it after Buck, because Buck was one of the best ambassadors in baseball. And everybody loved Buck, right? And Buck was one of the first black coaches and black scouts in baseball. So Danny and Fred and myself, we hopped on a plane right after that meeting. We flew to Kansas City. Now I live here in Kansas City now. And we sat down with Bob Kendrick, Buck, and Mr. Motley, and told Buck what our dream was, what we were trying to do, what our vision was for this group. And that man about jumped out of his chair. We wanted to name it after him, but he understood what was needed in the game. One thing that he didn't have, you know, and so, you know, in his journey, you know, he didn't have that support. He did a lot of this by himself and what we were trying to do. So we walked out of there, man, just excited. He blessed us, allowed us to use his name. And we try to make sure that every year we talk about Buck at our meeting, but we try to live the way Buck lived. I mean, and one thing that he was good, I met Buck my first year scouting the fall of 88 in Sarasota. I mean, I was in awe. I was like a little kid. You know, I was 23 years old. I was like, man, this man walked into the ballpark, and every scout in that building, every scout in that ballpark, they raved about Buck O'Neill. They talked to Buck, and he was so nice. And I got enough, you know, I was nervous. I finally went over and introduced myself to him, and he set me down. Like, hey, son, how you doing? I'm like, good, Mr. Buck. And he started talking to me, and he talked to me like he'd known me all my life, and gave me advice about how to stay in, gave me advice about how to work, being nice to people, being respectful, respect the game, make sure you always look presentable. I mean, he didn't know me from nothing. And he gave me advice, and we were able to sit down with him after, you know, after we asked him to use his name. And, you know, and he was just so excited about what we were trying to get done. And, you know, later years, we were able to bring the Buck to Kansas City. And I think year five of the Buck, we came here. And he had a chance to sit down and speak to the group. He walked in the group. It was, by that time, it was 50 of us or so in the meeting. And he did not realize it was that many of us scouting and coaching at that time. And he about jumped out of the room, and they had to usher him out of the room because he didn't want to stop talking to anybody. And so we've been blessed. I've talked enough. I'm sorry, but I can talk about this all day. And I know I got to go, but I just love this group and I love what we've been doing.
You've mentioned your age. I'm curious, with regards to the profession of scouting and with regards to what you see now in baseball, what inspires you?
Oh, I still love to hunt for players. I mean, that's always going to be the biggest thing. You know, the hunt for players, the hunt for talent, trying to walk into a ballpark and figure that out is still one of my biggest motivations. And then the other one, my passion, is just helping develop people.
So give us a hunt the player story, like your favorite one.
God, my favorite one is probably one of my favorite players I've ever signed is Orlando Hudson. When I was with Toronto, I was an area scout, and I basically inherited Orlando as draft and follow. Back when we had draft and follows, the first year we did not sign him. The first year as a draft and follow, we redrafted him and just followed him. And every game I saw him play in those 2 years, I never saw him swing and miss. And if you know Orlando, he never stops talking as well. But he's probably one of the best instinctive baseball players that I'd ever seen. I mean, he went to Spartanburg Methodist Junior College in South Carolina. And when you talk to him, you still have his passion for the game and his overall intelligence for the game. His baseball IQ was unbelievable. And just the way he played, he was always in the right spot, always around the game. He believed in himself tremendously. I think a lot of people, because he was so vocal, they didn't really understand how good a baseball player this man was. Now, he was an all-star. He had a really great career. But going into that, people, they killed him because he was a college shortstop. They couldn't run, right? So people go, well, he's a shortstop. They can't run. And we can't take this player. And every time I saw him play, it was just, wow, always in the right spot, always talking, always a leader around his people. And that's how his career played out. So he's probably the best story for me because we were able to, you know, just we stayed with the man, with the person and what he brought to the table. And he had a tremendous career all on him, but not on me, but all on him. But it was just the things that we saw and I saw that every time I walked in there, he just never swung and missed. And everybody just raved about him. His teammates raved about him. Everybody. So he's probably my best story.
Hey, I want to jump in here. I want to ask you a question. Basically, you've seen a lot in your day, right? You started in '88 as an area scout, no experience. Now here we sit, 2024. You're vice president of player personnel for the Pirates. You've seen the evolution. Obviously, this is SIS, Sports Info Solutions. We deal in data. We deal in numbers. You've seen the evolution of numbers, analytics, data-driven baseball, right? You are a scout by trade. And I always tell people that the original form of data is what scouts see, right? That's data. That's a data input as well. So talk about your evolution personally, coupling what you see and what you know to be true in 37 years of being inside, on the inside of identifying players, with what analysts, what the data, what these things are telling us now about players and about the game as a whole.
I think we've always been into data. I think that's where we get sidetracked that we've never used it before. So, we talked about it my first year in scouting, when we had to go to our draft, we had to have all the stats for every player. We always looked at it. When I went into my first pro game, the first thing you would do when you walk into the pro ballpark is you walk to the press box and get stat pack. And you sit there, you open the stat pack, and you go, how many walks, how many home runs, how many doubles, what's the fielding percentage, you know, how many errors, how many innings this guy's pitching, all those things. And I think we forget that we've been using, this has always been a numbers game. What the evolution has been, we've taken those numbers and we put them on steroids, right? And we just dive into them even more. And we have those signs. So we talk about this here all the time. When we can take the scouting report and then we can take the objective information, if they're very similar, we're extremely excited, right? By what the scout sees and then what the objective number is telling us as well, right? And so how do we blend all that together? That's what we're trying to do. Now, when they don't come together, right? If our analysts are saying one thing, our scouts are saying the other thing, the question that we have to continue to ask ourselves is why? Why is this changing? Why is this different? What are we looking at? How can we dig into this a little bit more? What questions should our scouts be asking now at the ballpark? What questions should our analysts be asking our scouts? What should we be giving them to focus on? So we'll just talk about this fastball playability, right? Normally, if I go to the ballpark and I'm sitting there and I'm watching a guy fastball play at the top of the zone, my eyes are telling me, hey, man, this guy's fastball plays different at the top of the zone. Now, when I go back and open my computer, I want to see those same numbers. I want to see the same thing. The spin rate, vertical, all those things, what does it look like? Now, if it's different from a scouting standpoint, if those numbers are different, there's a history that his ball doesn't play that way. Me as a scout, the next day, I need to go ask why. Why is this different? Did he make an adjustment? Are they focusing on something different? What is the philosophy of the organization? So we take it as this is another tool in our tool bag, the objective information, and try not to get for our scouts to be over analytical, but we want them to understand the numbers. So when they walk into the ballpark, they can be extremely focused and targeted about what we feel that we can influence. Every organization can influence different things. Some organizations are really good with hitters. Some organizations are really good with pitchers. Some, depending on, you know, arm slot, arm angle, delivery, all those type things. So we want to take those, the information that we have, and advance the evaluation skills that our scouts have as well. So long story short, Bobby, we want to take all this information and continue to use it as another tool. It's not the end all to be all because we still are very young, the objective information age, right? We're very, very young in it. And what's happening is that we keep changing the inputs. Every time right. You walk in, we change the inputs. So, well, this input didn't work. Well, let's go to this. We're changing the inputs all the time. So we're always looking to make adjustments, just like in scouting, we're making adjustments of what we're looking for, what we can influence. So all this technology, all this information is still very new, but we're trying to blend all of it together. And like I said, we've always used it, but now it's just more on steroids. And I think there's some really good points and really good things there too. So we use it.
The Buck O'Neill, the organization, some of its goals include supporting the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum funded by Buck O'Neill, promoting baseball in the inner cities by educating coaches and mentoring players through annual clinics, awarding scholarships to students who have excelled in academia and who exhibit an interest in baseball, and continual education of scouts and coaches within the association. Steve Williams, last word on the Buck.
Yeah, and I think that we have reached those goals. I mean, that's the one thing that we talk about all the time, Lee, is as we continue to give back to those communities. And the one thing that we're very happy of, we've seen a shift in the membership of the Buck that has gotten younger. So we're getting younger coaches, younger scouts, younger front office execs to be able to mentor, to continue to do that. We talk about our coaching staffs, from our college coaches to our high school coaches. They're coming to the meetings and we're feeding them the information that they need to be better and learning how to coach these young players as well. Our young, we talk about, we had a young kid, I'll tell this quick story. We had a young man who came as a junior in college to the Buck, who now just got his first job in baseball. And it started him coming to the Buck and our membership, bringing people in. We asked him to do it all the time. He got a chance to network and meet people. Now he's getting a chance to, you know, work as working full-time job, coming right out of college. So we've hit those. And then going into the communities, you know, and having our clinics and watching those players play, we can talk about a ton of players. I don't want to go down their list, but we probably, with the group that we've been working with and the young men that we've helped and the coaching staffs that we've helped, we probably produced over 400 young players that's been touched by the Buck, that's been in college or in pro ball in the last, you know, 20 years. You know, just with the influence of the people in that room and the coaches, and impact, and how we support each other and report, and we're supporting each other nationally, right? So we might have our meeting once a year, but our touch with the Buck and the membership is all year long. And we have members that bounce around and they feed each other and they give information to the kids and the families and all of that. So we've been very, very, very happy with just our progress and the impact that we've had within the community that we really want to serve.
Steve Williams, thank you for joining us. I know you got to go.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it. Hey, guys, have a good day. Thanks, Bobby. Thanks, Mark.
I want to do some follow-up to that interview. Bobby's someone who has known Steve for a long time, and there was a lot more to say, both on his end and I think on Bobby's end. So go ahead, Bobby, the floor is yours.
Clearly, we were a little bit crunched for time, and Steve was too. His impact on this game in 2024 is immeasurable. He's one of these people. There's no organization. If you go somewhere, if you go out in the community, the baseball community, if you're in a scouting situation in a ballpark, if you say Steve Williams, someone there is going to know who he is. And it's not because he's famous. It's because he's been unbelievably impactful in helping guide the careers of so many people inside this game, on the field, off the field, in the front office. I mean, it's in so many different areas. Stevie Williams has been just absolutely incredible as far as teaching and helping bring along people in such a selfless manner. There's so many people that he has taught, mentored, and then eventually, you know, those folks have gone on to have big jobs in the industry, including GMs and presidents of baseball operations. You know, it's been my contention that Steve Williams could have been a GM many years ago, 10, 15 years ago, because of his ability to lead people, to make decisions that are driven by information and not emotion. And just his command of a room, his ability to command a room is legendary, and just get people to get on the same page and have, you know, a lot of these rooms, a lot of these, especially these scouting environments, you're going to have people that have really strong beliefs about this player is better than this player, that player. He is one that's able to get consensus. People may not like the outcome, but they respect the fact of how he either ran the room or guided the conversation. And it's just really good right now to see him get that promotion to vice president in the Pittsburgh Pirate organization. It's long overdue. Quite frankly, like I said before, he should have had a higher office. And, you know, things didn't necessarily work out that way. But one thing I will say is he has not been bitter about it. He's continued to mentor and help develop people and identify players that can do things at the major league level for different organizations. So, like I said, I can't I can't personally say enough good things about Stevie and the way he's his the way he's helped me and how I've watched him help others. You know, and you talk about the Buck O'Neill, and again, it was very important for him. You know, I came into it later. Obviously, within the last 10 years, I've been an executive and a coach in two different organizations, and now I'm here at SIS. But he wanted to make sure that this was more than just, you know, quote unquote, a black organization. It's a baseball organization that is going to help open doors for people, black and brown, men and women alike. And, you know, one of the main speakers and one of the main people who's been, makes a point to be at the Buck O'Neill meetings as often as he can. It's Eric Neander, former SIS video scout, started as a video scout at SIS many years ago, and now he's president of baseball operations for the Tampa Bay Rays. And he is Eric is always at the Buck. He asked him to speak last year and gave a very, you know, impassioned speech about what diversity means to him. And then obviously, if you look at Tampa's organization, they mean it. It's all over the map. I mean, with people of diverse backgrounds, creed, colors, religions, it does not matter. If you're competent and you have the ability to grow, Eric Neander finds a way for you to be on the staff down there in Tampa. And I hosted a panel a couple of years ago with Navery Moore, former SIS employee, who's now in the front office with the Minnesota Twins. So, I mean, it's, you know, what Stevie, he's underselling it because he's humble. I'm not going to be humble for him. I'm going to give him his flowers. Stevie, Danny Montgomery, Mr. Fred Wright, the contributions that these men have made to really break down some doors and help guide some careers over the course of the last 25 years has just been immense.
LaCroy Hawkins pitched 21 seasons in the major leagues for 11 different teams. He's currently a special assistant to baseball operations for the Twins. He's got a new podcast with Jock Jones, and I imagine he's still enjoying the Super Bowl victory for his godson, the Chiefs quarterback, Patrick Mahomes. Hey, LaCroix, am I right about that?
Oh, you're definitely correct about that. And win is great. And seeing it in person was even better.
I saw the pictures on your Instagram of how close to the field you were. What was the view like?
I was right where the Chiefs came out of the tunnel, probably at the maybe 10 or 15-yard line, just 9 rows up off the field. Perfect seat to see the game when they're on that side of the field. I had no bad view of the Usher concert, but when they were on the field, I mean, we were right there when either team was in the red zone on the Chiefs side of the field.
Awesome. So I read a lot about players who want to grow the game, and I feel like that phrase has kind of a special meaning for you. What does grow the game, grow baseball mean for you?
For me, it means just everybody getting an opportunity to play the game, whether it's minority kids, African-American kids that look like Bobby and I, or females in the game. So just continue to grow the game so everybody has an opportunity to play. We know for a fact everyone's not going to make it to the major league, but we do know that everybody can enjoy the game that we love so much.
That's awesome, Hawk. And it's great to be on here with you. You were a contributor to one of the best days I had in the big leagues. I worked a walk-off to you and then ended up scoring the winner run that day. I did have a ton of highlights in the big leagues. I wasn't there long enough. You got 21 years. I got like 21 hours. But nonetheless, you were right in the middle of one of my great highlights. So I appreciate you for that. So I think in 21 years, you give up one or two. So I appreciate
it. Glad I could be a part of it. I'm glad I was a part of it.
Anyway, no, listen, it's still February. And I will say this. The good thing about SIS and the good thing about being on a podcast with Mark here is he is genuinely interested and invested in this, and it's real, his interest in making sure that all people, women, black, white, whatever, have an opportunity to enjoy the game however they can, whether it's from being very invested in the statistical side or playing the game or opportunities within the game. And Mark is real about that. Our CEO, Dan Hanning Daly, is real about that. And obviously, as black men, we want to see the game grow in our community. So, yeah, I know Mark alluded to it a little bit earlier about the state of the black player inside the game and what's coming, the things of that nature. Tell us a little bit about the things you're doing specifically in that regard and what that means for you and the legacy you're leaving inside the game.
So what we're doing with amateur baseball and, you know, minority baseball, MLB came up with this concept called MLB Develops. And it all had started with Rob Manfred, Commissioner of Baseball, understood that there was definitely a lack of participation from the African-American in our country in the game, especially when the numbers were in the 20% in the 70s and the 80s. And then all of a sudden we saw this tremendous dip, and it didn't dip overnight. It was a gradual dip. And Rob understood that there was an issue We started a program. Tony Riggins runs a program. We have the Dream Series over MLK Weekend for minority players. And then we have the Breaking Series, which is the first of June, first or the second weekend in June, usually. And then after All-Star Game, MLB All-Star Game, we have the Hank Aaron Invitational, where they bring in kids for 2 weeks, two different groups of kids for 2 weeks, and pick a team to go to Atlanta and play in the Hank Aaron game. So Major League Baseball has done a great job of identifying, you know, minorities, African-American kids that are interested in the game, giving them opportunity to be for exposure, giving opportunity for college coaches to see them, giving them opportunity for scouts to see them, and just being able to be a part of that and seeing some of the fruits of our labor, making it to the major leagues and getting drafted every year for the last 5 years has been satisfying and gratifying.
Yeah, no doubt. You shout to big shout. You mentioned a few guys out there. Big shout to Tony Riggins, Dale Matthews up there in the commissioner's office. I know Kendall Jones does a lot up there too. And then honestly, to one of my personal mentors, I know kind of oversees a little bit of everything, Ty Waller. He was my farm director when I got drafted in San Diego many moons ago, and then kept a very close personal relationship with him. But there's a lot of people doing a lot of things, so I don't want to miss anybody. But those are the folks that I know really well that operate.
See, I would have started naming guys, but we would have been here for a while. And I lack of time. I just talked about the end, and that's Tony Riggins. But I should mention Dale and Kendu, because Dale, Kendu, and Tony, those guys working together, they get a lot done from the MLB develop aspect of MLB.
Absolutely.
And I get the feeling that if we had gone through your full list, it would have been as long of a list as your teammates from your 21 years in the major leagues. I want to ask you, too, about the history of the game, because I've seen you do some videos related to this. I've heard you talk about it in the past. I feel like that at your different stops, it's something that's come up as a subject. And you have an understanding of the history of the Negro Leagues that I don't know that necessarily a lot of players have. Do you have a favorite story or player or aspect that is of particular importance to you that you really make sure that the younger guys are aware of?
So I usually talk about Buck O'Neill, because I actually had a chance to get to know Buck and able to call him Uncle Buck. Mm. And so most of my stories are about Buck. Just I saw him over at the stadium in Kansas City, and he identified us and made sure that he embraced us and made us promise that we'll always be part of the Negro League Museum with Bob Kendrick. And, you know, just the stories of listening to him talk about his relationship with all those guys that he played in the Negro Leagues with. Talk about his, you know, he was scouting, being the first Black major league scout, and the guys that he was able to sign, and just having a personal relationship with him. I know plenty about Satchel Paige. I know tons about Jackie Robinson and Josh Gibson, but, you know, everything I knew about them, I was told. I actually had a chance to sit down on many occasions and break bread and talk trash and just pick the brain of the great Buck O'Neill.
It's awesome. I wanted to talk about, I mentioned it, 21 years in the major leagues. And you're someone who is essentially a story of someone. You came from Gary, Indiana, which can be a tough place, made it all the way to the major leagues. You survived it physically the last 21 years. And I think that in itself, there aren't that many guys that can do that. How did you do that?
I like to tell people, like, I was able to avoid injury. Not sure if it's anything I actually did working out or anything, I was able to just avoid injuries. I think the fact that being tall, long, and lanky helped out. But just being a long, lanky, and I was never a guy who tried to overthrow. I always wanted to make my mechanics as easy and as efficient as possible. I didn't want to grunt and try to throw hard as I could every time. I have this saying, I threw harder when my muscles were at their most relaxed state, not when I was snorting and grunting, trying to throw 95 miles an hour. I didn't smoke, didn't drink when I played, completely clean, didn't do any of that. I attribute that to, you know, longevity and also being able to make adjustments, man. When I had the advantage, there was a time in the major league that the hitters were going to make an adjustment to me. And then I had to make an adjustment. So we always say the game is about adjustments. I was able to make those adjustments, stay away from those serious injuries, take care of my body. And when you put your head down and go do your job every single day, year after year, when you look up, hell, you could have you know, you start off looking, I just want to make it to arbitration. You get to arbitration, I just want to make it to free agency. And then when you get to free agency, and I just want to make it to 10 years to get my full pension. And it goes like that. And I always tell the guys now, enjoy your time. Enjoy the ride. Enjoy, because when it's over, it's over. And there's not many things you can do once you retire from baseball that's going to give you that same adrenaline, that same competition, and that people are going to like truly respect you in day-to-day life. Like in baseball, you get that. In the real world, you got to go out and earn it every single day. Baseball, you can just coast on the back of your baseball card. People don't care about that in the real world. They don't care about it in the real world.
Hawk, you touched on something. That's tremendous. You touched on something that was interesting in the beginning of that answer. And you talked about, you know, Mark asked you about the longevity. And you talked about not trying to throw your you know, just max effort every pitch or whatever. That's today's pitching. That's today's baseball. So how does a guy like you who has so much to give, right? You work with the youth. You're in Twins camp right now. Sure, you're in pitching meetings. You're with the pitchers. You're with the coaches. You're with the analysts, which is a whole other wrinkle. How do you make sense of that? How do you make sense of modern baseball, modern pitching, everything, you know, having a number and a metric tied to it? How does a guy like you, you're an intelligent human being, period, full stop, not just baseball, man. You're an intelligent human, and you don't make it as long as you did without being intelligent. And you just talked about the adjustments. How do you make sense of all that where the game is now?
When I tried to make sense of it on my own, Bobby, it didn't make sense. I had to have one of our young guys, one of our video guys in A-ball, fresh out of college, explain it to me. And the best way he explained it to me, I played it long enough that they had data on me.
Okay.
And he explained to me what made LaTroy Hawkins very effective. That's when it starts to click for me. I'm like, oh, there is something to this. Now I know why I did what I did and the results that I got. So for me, it was like having somebody pretty much be hands-on, letting me know what everything meant and how it applied to my pitch repertoire. So that was kind of cool. I thought that was like the breakthrough point for me, being able to use my numbers, not looking at somebody else, use my numbers and say, this is what made you good. This is what your fastball did. This was your profile. This is the way the ball came out of your hand, the way your wrist is, the reason why you got some sink and got a lot of arm side run, just little things like that. And I also told myself, if I don't adapt, I'm going to become a dinosaur.
That's right.
If I want to be in this game, I have to learn. I get to pick and choose what I like about it, about the analytics. I get to pick and choose because some of it I don't need. I don't really need. I like it, but I don't need it for them to tell me that was a good pitch. I can trust these. And when I can't trust these, I'll ask you, Bobby, how was that pitch? That was nasty. They don't let you know if it's good or not. It's good.
That's right. That's absolutely, you know, right. And I always say too, you know, I think you would agree, and you kind of just pointed to it. You know, you had, you know, guys like yourself for 20 plus years, 30 years in the game, whatever. At the very beginning, the original data source was the eyes. And it doesn't mean that the metrics don't count, right? But it's just another input. And so just like, you know, you'll have a guy come along and say, hey, listen, I've been doing this for 25 years. I know what I'm looking at. But then you'll have an analyst saying, hey, I've been doing this for 10 years. You know, I know what the data is telling me too. Both are correct. Like those are just inputs and they're tools. You have to, the teams that come together, the people that come together to use both inputs of information the best are the teams usually to have the most success. So no, I think that's great how you were able to get up to speed on what's happening and really in today's baseball related back to you.
Right. And you're right. They're tools. And I think the guys who are coming to the game that have never played the game, I think, well, I know there's always a lack of communication when you get the guys who feel like they know everything about the game, but they're forgetting the one component. And that's the component of what a player feels and being out on that mound or being in that batter's box. Because the number can tell you everything. But in the heat of the battle, we're throwing the numbers out and we're going to go on what the guy, his tendencies are. You're going to have to trust your eyes because you can't take a swing or throw a pitch and look at the iPad and be like, okay, well, I just didn't. That ball came out of my hand weird. But no, you got to make the adjustment on the fly. That stuff is a great teaching tool, but remember, it's not with you all the time. So for you to have to depend on that, that's when they don't learn how to push through, make adjustments, and find out and understand themselves. They need somebody to tell them whether they're doing good or bad.
When you're talking to younger pitchers, you said you talked about you using the fact that you lasted 21 years, you did it without injury. A lot of young pitchers seem to have a tendency to overthrow, and it kind of gets in their head. You're someone who pitched in a lot of big situations throughout the entirety of your career. You had very good moments. You had a few moments that I'm sure you'd like to have back. What do you tell the younger pitchers that you're working with about the about not the analytics side of the game, but the mental side of the game?
Mark, there's no moments I won back. It was all part of it. It was all part of it. I mean, I knew I wasn't going to go out there and not give up a run, not give up a hit. That was all part of the game. But what I tell the guys now, like, for me, when I go visit our minor league teams and talk with the pitchers, I'm not there to help them with their mechanics, their pitch design, their repertoire. I'm not there for that. I'm there, and I've had to learn this over the years of doing my job. I'm really there from here to here, from here to here, because from your neck up, the game hadn't changed. The game hadn't changed from the neck up. Nope. So I'm that guy. When I go into town, I tell the pitching coach, like, hey, Mark, who on your staff needs to hear the same message from a different voice? They're identifying. And I go talk to those guys, and they'll sometimes it's better coming from a guy who actually played the game, because we can say the same thing, but they're going to trust me more because I played the game. That's what they're going to do. It's happened 10 out of 10 times. It never failed. They're going to trust me. Even though what that other guy is saying, what he's saying is true, but it's that whole trust factor that LaTroy's been in the trenches. You know, he's been out there with bases loaded. He's given up a walk-off bomb. He's walked a couple guys in a row and had to make pitches in a high-level situation. Well, the guys that hadn't done it, I think that's the most important component that they'll never have.
One other thing that I wanted to bring up. We had Justine Siegel on this podcast to talk about her organization and the work that she's doing for women in baseball. And I asked her, name a former player who has either worked with you or seen what you're doing, who has walked away impressed. And she said you. And I'm curious about your impressions of the growth of women in baseball.
Man, having a daughter makes you see the world differently. Definitely makes you see the world different. Just being able to hang out with Veronica Alvarez and all the women that are on that national team and the coaches, they're coaches now, and being able to go out and teach some of the young girls that love to play the game that I played, the game that Bobby played, I feel like I'm giving them what I wasn't able to give my daughter, because I always said in my mind that, well, you can't get to the big league, so why are you playing baseball? But I taught her how to play. I played catch with my daughter. My daughter can catch my 93 miles an hour fastball. She can catch my slider. So I gave her all the tools, but I never went out and put her in a situation where she can showcase those tools. And I admit, I feel bad about it. I really do. But my way of giving back is seeing all the young ladies that I've come in contact with, all the ladies I've come in contact with that love the game, want to learn how to play the game. And we have these incredible women who built this bridge before them that are still part of the game and able to pour into their cup. And I get to be around it. I have a blast, because you know what? From coaching my daughter's basketball team, is one thing I know about young ladies. They're going to do it the exact way you tell them to do it. They're going to do it the right way. When you deal with the guys, they hear you, but they don't. But when you tell the ladies how to do it, they're going to do it. They're so fundamentally sound that it's absolutely amazing to watch them play baseball.
To wrap up, can you tell us about this new podcast that you've got going?
Yeah. Jock Jones, a former teammate of mine and my little brother, you know, he came to me one day and was like, I want to do a podcast. I said, well, I know a couple guys that produce podcasts and they do this and that. And, you know, he's like, well, link me up with him. And I was like, you know what? Would you like a co-host? And he's like, what a question, Hawk. So I was sitting around, we're trying to think about, he was telling me why he wanted to start it, you know, what the premises were going to be about, what we're going to be about. And it was about like getting it right when the media gets it wrong, because we always hear the media side of things and it isn't always correct. It's not. I mean, and it is what it is, but being able to hear the player side of what happened And, you know, Jock went through something in his career after when he was coaching with Dusty and with the Nationals, and he never talked about it. And he wanted to talk about it, but he never talked about it. He never had a platform where he thought people would listen. Nobody would listen. So it's like, man, we got to find a name. And we came up, our producer, Jeremiah Tittle, came up with thick skin. You got to have thick skin to be an athlete, to be an entertainer, or just to be, you know, a regular citizen. You have to have thick skin because things are going to come at you that you're going to have to be able to roll it off your shoulders and proceed on and try to get, you know, get to where you're trying to get to. So we came up with Thick Skin Podcast. With Thick Skin on Instagram is thick_skin_podcast. You can find us there, or you can find us wherever you listen to your podcast.
Get that promo in. I see you working. You already got the podcast game down, man.
Good plug. Thank you. All right. So we wrap up with LaTroy Hawkins. On his podcast, he's had, among other guests, Dontrell Willis, Kenny Lofton, Torrey Hunter, a bunch of Twins, as you would expect. LaTroy, thanks for joining us. Best of luck this year. Twins going to be good?
We're going to be good. You know, we're tired of just saying we're going to be good. We're trying to take that next level to winning championships.
Thanks, LaTroy.
All right. Thanks, Bobby. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate you. Thanks, Justin.
You got it.
Thanks, all. Appreciate you, man.
So just to round things out after our conversations with LaTroy and Steve Williams, I wanted to talk about trips that each of us have made. I have been to the Jackie Robinson Museum. I did that recently in New York City. It is in Lower Manhattan, a little bit away from a lot of the tourist attractions, but a huge building right next to the subway. You know, the subway, it is right in front of you, which is very nice. I am sometimes not the best person to go to a museum with because I might be looking for like mistakes or silly things. But I can tell you that this museum was a great museum to go to. It was ideal. Like, everything about it was perfect. And I think the thing that I liked the most was that they devoted as much space, more or less, to his non-baseball stuff as they did to the entirety of his baseball career. You had stuff about Jackie Robinson, the businessman. You had stuff about Jackie Robinson, the journalist, who wrote multiple hundreds of articles for Black newspapers and for New York newspapers as well. You had stuff, and it was honest. It said some things he did worked, some things he didn't. You had a bank, the story of the bank that Jackie Robinson started to try to help Black businesses. And it was very comprehensive. The baseball stuff was what you would expect. It was a very comprehensive overview of everything that happened and Jackie Robinson's career. And it included tributes to the family that housed Jackie Robinson in Florida, in Daytona Beach, during spring training, the Harris family, and it included a reference to Ralph Branca and how helpful he was to Jackie Robinson, and it included a reference to Eddie Stanky, who went up to Jackie Robinson at the very beginning and said, I don't like you, I don't want you here. But then there were certain incidents that happened where Eddie Stanky was Jackie Robinson's biggest defender, and they listed people as like helpful or people that were problematic for him, and they listed Eddie Stanky as friend or foe, ? And I thought that was an interesting way to do it. So I highly recommend it. It's in Lower Manhattan. A lot of schools go there on trips these days. They were telling me a good day to go is like on the weekend. There weren't as many people there. You have plenty of room to work with. There's films. It was really good. But one museum that I haven't been to that you've been to is the Negro League Baseball Museum. Can you tell us about that?
A tremendous experience. Been there several times. It's interesting that if you haven't heard, Bob Kendrick, the executive director, I'm not sure of his title, but he's the lead man over there. And we talked about Stevie Williams and also who's the co-president of the Buck O'Neill Scouts Coaches Association throughout professional baseball. And then we had LaTroy Hawkins on here who had, you know, personal dealings with Mr. O'Neill. And it's interesting that you talk about that. And Mr. Kendrick was Buck's, Mr. O'Neill's right-hand man for many years until his passing a few years back. So the museum is just, it is what it's supposed to be. It's the shrine to all things Negro League baseball. And it's a humbling experience when you walk through the doors. If you haven't seen it, you should Google my name. I'm a Black man. So this means a lot to me. And being someone who has been able to do the things that I've been able to do inside the game, both as a player, an administrator, as a coach, as a kind of a hybrid of the two, to realize that a gentleman who was alive during my lifetime was the first to do many of these same roles. He was the first Black scout. He was the first Black coach on field. And so the Negro League Museum as a whole is, it pays homage to all of those who did not have those opportunities, the role they played, talk about some of the black ownership in some of these ownership groups with minority black owners in Major League Baseball. Well, Rube Foster was owning teams in the Negro Leagues and operating teams way back in the day. Talk about the influence just all across the entire landscape. There's no area of baseball that wasn't touched by black people when owning, operating, playing, administrating in the Negro Leagues. And so it's a really an homage to all of those people who are very popular, to the Buck O'Neills, to the Satchel Paiges, to the Josh Gibsons, and also to the folks that you don't know that had tremendous careers and tremendous impact on the game of baseball in this country, but happened to be black and not able to participate in the major leagues or participate in organized baseball as it was back then. So for me, the cool thing about museums like the Jackie Robinson Museum, where I've yet to go, but also the Negro League Museum in Kansas City, is that every single time you go there, you find something new. And it's not that they have a lot of new exhibits, because I'm sure they do upgrade and refresh the things that are there, but there's other minute things that you see that you didn't see on previous visits. And for me, that's the joy of it. And it never gets old, especially if you're able to be there during the day where Bob Kendrick is around, because you better buckle up, because you're going to be there a minute, because he's going to tell you stories on stories on stories on stories. And he's engaging. He's an engaging storyteller. If you haven't heard the podcast Black Diamonds, it's all over the place where you get your podcasts. But, you know, give it a listen. If you find yourself in the Midwest, go to Kansas City. It's worth the trip. You will learn if you care about the game, if you care about the role of those who are not white in the game, you will learn something and you will understand that they were doing this during Black History Month, right? But Black history is American history, period, full stop. And it's a part, it's a fabric. If baseball is our national pastime and it's a fabric of our being as those people who love the game, the Negro League Museum is as much of that. So certainly if you find yourself with an opportunity to go there, go take it in, go back, take it in again. And then if you find yourself in the Midwest again, go a third time, because it is well worth the trip.
I was going to say the Jackie Robinson Museum is similar in that there is so much stuff in there in what is, I think, a relatively small amount of space relative to other museums. And there are a lot of little things like the sign on his house door and just things like that that you could easily miss if you're just kind of walking through, which is why you might want to give it a second go. And if you're in New York City, give it a first go. Bobby, thanks for joining me. We look forward to talking to you down the road.
Mark, it's always a pleasure.
And this wraps up this episode. Our next episode comes in early March as we get to our biweekly schedule. Thanks to Steve Williams and LaTroy Hawkins for joining us. For Bobby Scales and our producer, Justin Stein, I'm Mark Simon. Thank you for listening to the Sports Info Solutions Baseball Podcast.
Thank you for tuning in to the SIS Baseball Podcast. If you like the show, please rate and review us on iTunes. If you have any questions, email the show at mark@sportsinfosolutions.com or tweet us at sportsinfo_SIS.